Welcome to the I Warmer Comics and Games podcast, recorded at I Warmer Comics and Game, a local comic store in Thornton, Colorado. You can reach us by phone at 303-460-7226 or on all social media platforms. Thank you and enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the I Want More Comics and Games podcast. I'm Richie.
I'm Sean. You worked hard on that.
I am Keith.
That is good. And?
And I'm Tyler.
Oh, my goodness. There's another person in the room.
Tyler.
Welcome, Tyler. What's up, Tyler? Thank you for being a part of the podcast.
These Oompa Loompas just come out of the walls.
Another member of the IWMCG family joining us today. We're going to talk about his specialty. Yeah, later on.
He decided to come in and join us for this.
That's correct. But before we get into all that, we should jump into what I call the news. The most interesting thing is that a big event happened, and that usually it's just kind of like, hey, this happened, but it really is a kind of an achievement for society that we actually had not one, but a couple of Comic-Cons happen within the last couple podcasts that we've done. DenverCon happened during Halloween, mm-hmm. and San Diego Comic-Con special edition happened during Thanksgiving weekend, right after Thanksgiving. So a big event. I think it was a third of what they usually have, but a lot of information came out of that, a ton of HBO Max news. There were exclusives that were, and previously before we would get tickets to these things to go and kind of purchase.
Do you miss going?
I do.
I remember like right before all this craziness of the world has happened.
Yeah.
Went to every single one for like 8 years straight?
Ten
years straight.
Yeah, we were at 10.
He's still on the streak because this was special edition.
Yeah, I'm still on the streak. And I'm still on the streak based on how to get tickets, too, because every time you go, you're in for the next ticket. And mm-hmm. people that went to the special edition forgo their line in for the tickets to go to this. So they got to go, but they need to reapply to get into the previews.
Oh, I thought it was the other way. I thought that you actually got to turn around and you got preference to get to the next one.
So that there was, I think you're right, actually.
I think because they wanted to encourage people to go to this one.
There's still the line. Like if you didn't go, you're not out, but there is a preference line now. So there's almost three different entrances.
Look, not to make it confusing.
Don't ever try to figure it out until it's your time that you got to go and make it happen.
I do.
So the week before you need to get your tickets, go figure out how you go get tickets.
Well, I do tell everybody that wants to go to San Diego to go fill out the application to be able to get in line now.
Yeah, get
because you'll just forget.
You have to have a San Diego ID.
Yeah, if you don't have an ID, make an ID now. That's how you get in.
And then from where we're recording this right now, this is right before Emerald City. Is about to be this weekend.
Correct. So there's just a ton of cons going on.
Our buddy Joe just put up his pictures of his cool looking booth.
Oh yeah?
Which buddy Joe?
Joe Benitez.
Oh. Nice. Isn't
Lady
Isaac,
Mechanica. Yeah.
Isaac gonna be there too?
Alexa. And Alexa. I think that's Alexa's hometown is what she was saying.
Oh, yeah.
That's
cool.
Crazy.
Yep. And I've seen I thought it was Matt Frank's booth out there or was it I know a couple. Brian Haberlin, I think,
was there. Yes,
several people that you know are on my feet and mm-hmm. all this are setting up for Emerald City. Has always been known more as an artist.
Yeah. It's very comic centric. I definitely went, and I definitely enjoyed that as far as the comic mm-hmm. part of it.
I've never been to Emerald Con, and dang it, I want to go.
It's better for comics.
Yeah, it's way more
legit.
I want to go even more.
Well, it's just like we talk about. Every store finds an identity, and every con finds an identity. And San Diego became Hollywood. Yep. You know, like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
It's,
yeah, I mean,
it's like not a knock, said, but
it's a special
kind
edition.
Of a no-brainer from where it's located.
If you're going to bring out a big movie announcement,
John Cena came out there. For HBO Max dressed as Peacemaker to yeah. You know, to highlight. So that definitely checks out. And then you go to EEC for.
Well, ECC was always about the Irish Alley is one of the best ones I hear out there. You,
ooh,
it's
really?
Between absolutely. It's between that and New York. Okay. Like that's the consistent review I've always heard mm-hmm. about it being very yeah, very
I
good
think,
for that.
I think for the big ones, New York's the only one I really haven't been to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I haven't been to New York or Emerald.
Because
you've
never
been
C2,
to New York.
You've done C2E2. You did Emerald City.
I did, yeah,
you've
did both.
You've done
did
San Diego. Diego.
Where does C2E2 rank?
It's like a weird hodgepodge of kind of everything balanced equally.
It was okay. A little bit more entertainment based, like okay. Not Wizard World entertainment level.
I love me some Chicago, so eventually I will find myself there for sure.
And
it's definitely
and one
going.
Day they'll find a football team.
How dare ooh. You? Moving on,
swinging a hit.
But it's important to you know back to why this is news. It's important yeah. to see that you know there's. We all are trying to look for light at the end of the tunnel.
The seeds are blossoming into some normalcy.
As
well,
I mean,
they still are definitely dealing with whatever COVID mandates are for each con too. So
yes.
They have to mask up. They have to be vaccinated.
Oh yeah,
that all that's legit there. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of consideration for this, and like Denver's back on the map for July 4th weekend mm-hmm. Coming up, and you know, and people are turning around and looking at you know the options of what it's going to take to be able to do this type of stuff again, and even if it is vaccination required or negative tests plus you know
right.
Masks and things like this, social distancing, and like the big deal about the special edition is it was smaller attendance. To keep it more manageable.
Correct.
Well, I'm curious in a weird sort of a way because the cons kind of got so overbloated that they would get so packed.
Yeah.
I remember walking yeah. down San Diego the last time I went. That was 2010. And if you wanted to just cross the aisle, you had to kind of ride the wave of people
mm-hmm.
until you got to the other side and then make your way back.
I never had that problem. They just moved.
Yes.
You're a 5'5".
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're 6'5" and you start mad dogging people in the eye, they move. I don't get it.
Yeah, I always have my buddy Tim, who's a gigantic man, and he just kind of walks in front, and I just kind of
that's why we call dance. You the tail.
Yeah, I'm the caboose.
Yeah, just
it's like Master Blaster.
Yeah,
you're like on top of him.
If you
taking his ears and steering him, the way
yeah,
you go.
I ride him like one of those trolls in like Lord of the Rings. I mean,
so
just,
good.
You know, through the cons and their release, I am happy that that's coming out. But a lot of news drops through those. One of the things coming out of that is some interesting Dark Horse news. Dark Horse, the publisher, is looking to sell to Hollywood Studios. Which I find pretty interesting.
Like the entire company?
The company itself, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Right? I actually did not know this.
Yeah. You can add up a lot of pieces to this that make it start making sense.
You didn't know this because it came out 2 hours ago. It's really hot off the presses.
I learned something today.
So
you actually did like actual news this time.
I didn't.
Wow.
Well, I'm not going to.
You're not phoning it in like normal. Oh, wait.
Oh, wait.
I'm not going to reveal behind the curtain at how much research I've done.
I watched you for 5 minutes.
Yes, Google, what is the most current news? Alexa,
he's
can
like,
you help
like
my brother
out?
He's
doing this other show or stuff. What's my news for the show? Oh, God, I gotta look this up 2 minutes before we start.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
But there's a lot of pieces that make sense over this. Is obviously Hollywood loves an IP farm, you know, an area where you can turn around and you know get new ideas and fresh ideas on this. There are a lot of deep and relevant relationships with Dark Horse properties.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Horse has already had some levels of success in Hollywood with, you know, Mask is a long time ago, but it still was originally a Dark Horse
mm-hmm.
Published thing. Hellboy is
huge.
Is inside that.
That might be their biggest one.
And then,
No,
Stumptown was Oni. I was trying to think. There's something else out there that's like that.
What's the one that Pamela Anderson was in that I can't remember the name?
Barbarella.
Yeah, that was actually
Barbwire. Yeah,
Dark Horse.
Yes, it, was.
It was originally Dark Horse. Yep.
Concrete. Let's get him out here. Let's.
But the point being is that you know a lot of content. There's a trick in Hollywood where you can write a script with nondescript names on it, and then find the IP that plugs into it to try to like tap yourself into a fan base. And you know, 99 out of 100 times, this is going to be terrible.
Yeah.
You know, go see American Psycho 2.
That was really bad.
That was so.
I even like Mila Kunis a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I like
somebody
her.
Wrote a bad movie but, and goes, hey, what if we add the first 5 minutes and last 5 minutes this way? What happens? But anyway, you know, you it's natural. And the idea that, again, why did Disney buy Marvel? Why did, Warner Brothers buy DC? You know,
they were farming.
It is the cheapest creation of new content that you can have in this world.
Absolutely.
Comics are, and you get to, because there's almost no other point where you're creating content and you get to put so little upfront money into it and then also start raking in revenue right away against it. Mm. So many comics don't necessarily become a negative. You know, like right. If you're going to turn around.
They're basically already storyboards.
They not only storyboards, they like he says, they come with their own fan base.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to create a new character called Naomi, right?
Right.
For DC. And mm-hmm. you turn around and put it out there. And it's already selling great and selling comics well before we're even putting it into
CW show that might be coming out.
Or you're even going to try it and it's not going to do so great. And you're going to pull the plug before you spent millions of dollars in development.
Exactly.
So comics are very attractive.
Well, and to add to that, like current Ram V and his Swamp Thing run just was a 10-issue drop and out of nowhere bumped up to 16 because sales were so good. And this tells you that, you know, you don't have to overcommit to the ongoing comic book. You can really keep this in line and build based off of popularity without the risk, which is huge in IP. So Dark Horse going, anyone in Hollywood buying comic book IP kind of sees that as a way to get around dangerous risk taking, you know. Mm-hmm. The last bit of news I have is a teensy bit of a spoiler, so I'm going to give a little heads up. If you have not read and you're looking to read Gotham City Villains Anniversary Edition that dropped this week.
Am I?
Do not, you know, pause us or hit the skip button for a little bit. I'm going to talk about a little bit behind the scenes on the very first story called Bird Cat Love. It is written by the infamous Danny DeVito, and it is about Penguin, which is great. The artwork is by Dan Mora, who I am a huge fan of. And basically, it's a full-blown story about, and here comes the spoilers, it's a love story between Penguin and Catwoman and how ridiculous that concept would be, but if it were true. Danny DeVito pitched the story to DC. DC accepted it, and kind of a cash grab, but I love it, so I'm in 100%.
I wonder who gets left at the altar on this one.
Oh, right. Oh.
Savage.
Smoke. Where there's smoke.
My prediction is nobody gets left. It's you just wake up one day and realize you can't marry Bruce.
Wow.
What was I thinking?
This guy?
I'm not happy with the way this is going. The funny part about it, and I wanted to bring it up, is Danny DeVito.
A turtle.
Danny DeVito went to Michelle Pfeiffer because it's kind of told within that story arc that Dark Knight Returns story arc,
mm-hmm.
Or Batman Returns, sorry, story arc. He asked Michelle Pfeiffer if it was okay that he kind of created this fantasy, and he pitched it as a literal fantasy from his own head of marrying such a beautiful woman. And she totally said, cool, let's go with it.
That's the funny news part about it is saying, oh, I'm going to do something really creative, mm-hmm. and I want to be less creepy in the world, so I'm going to ask the girl if it's okay if I do it and all this. So it seems like, no. Like, it's funny that way. You know, to me, the spark that hit my head about this,
mm-hmm.
if you've got a story going on right now that's, what, going to be 8 issues called Batman 89?
Yes.
What?
And you throw this down.
Why don't you just like, hey, guys, just in case you want to come back for another story, I'm over here and I'd love to talk about.
And if you've been reading 89.
Can we get a nude variant?
Yeah. You know, like,
no, there has to be a variant where the Penguin is coming out of a couch saying hot. That has to happen.
I would
hot.
Thoroughly enjoy that. He's quoted saying, I did call Michelle and I told her that I was doing it. I said, look, it's like my fantasy. It's my dream come true to have an incredible romance with such a beautiful woman. And she said, I'm very excited to hear about it. Go for it. And that's how it came to be. So if you haven't grabbed it, pick it up. We have copies available. We're actually sold out of A, but we have several variants. They did like 5, I think, or something like that.
Yeah,
so
you've got some different ones.
What do you think about it, Tyler? Tyler may be on the shy side.
He's shy.
He's
and that's
dorbs.
Okay.
I have no opinion on that.
Did you see Batman Returns? It's an older You're young.
You're like one of those cinephiles.
Yeah, I've seen it.
You've seen it? Yeah. Oh, okay. You like it?
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is the romance at least fathomable to you that it could happen?
Not really, no.
That's why you read this. It's because then you can become a believer.
That is right.
It's a funny idea.
We can't all be superheroes, but in the comic books, we can. So why don't we talk about those comic books with our reviews?
Da-na-na-da.
See, when we had the editor, they had to use that and now made a song out of it.
What do you mean?
I refuse.
I am the editor.
I know.
I don't have to use it. I just bring up the fact that Richie was supposed to find like some kind of like cool little segue music here and
for reviews.
How's it doing?
It's slow, but we'll get there. So reviews, from what I understand, are going to be a little bit quick because I think only two of us had the time to take a real look at last week's comic books.
Flip a coin. Who's going first?
The very first one is definitely going to be Sean.
It was Tyler.
Oh, Tyler, go ahead.
Yeah, he totally read everything.
There, I don't believe that he could have read something last week because there was no Silver Surfer. Yeah. So. So
you can really talk about how bad the Tradmore artwork was. Go ahead, Tyler. Man. Tell us about it. How bad is it? He is shaking his head really bad. Yeah. It's really rough. He's actually puking into a bag right now.
Yeah, yeah. So this is kind of like radio. If you don't speak, nobody knows what you're doing.
I can definitely just give it
he's
to
he's raging.
Him.
He's raging.
So here's the deal is like Tyler doesn't think it's bad, but yet he's not going to go on record saying that.
That's true.
That's where I'm
going to
take it.
Okay,
let's move
that
on.
Does make sense.
Sean,
okay.
What did you do?
Hey, Hulk. A brand new Hulk. So I realized something today.
What's that?
I should have read the rest of the last Hulk run, and I think I missed the last six issues.
So you might have jumped ahead.
I jumped ahead, and they're like referencing stuff that happened to them all. It sounds like something big happened. So I probably should have read that.
Slow down just a sec.
Hell with it. I'm just going to keep going.
So you're talking about Old Immortal Hulk.
Yes.
Written by Al Ewing. And it was... It
was a story. I loved it a lot.
50, yeah. If I believe.
Uh-huh. I loved it a lot. And for me, I go through spurts where I'll read like 15
just
comics.
A ton, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then I won't read anything for like a year.
and then
kind of what
it.
Happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I hammer through it. And well, so I didn't hammer
it. It's great when he comes back 2 years later and goes, you know, that was a really good run.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm like, hey, man, if you had told somebody back then, maybe they'd have bought it.
Yeah, he did that with White Knight.
No, I was reading that as it was coming out. I missed the first three issues, and then I read the rest of them as they came out. Absolutely did.
That's Sean Murphy. I'll give him credit for that one.
Don't at me.
I'll at you right now.
Kill you.
But so you went from that, and you skipped ahead past the ending of Immortal, and now you're picking up the new Donny Cates run.
Donny Cates, and don't forget Mr. Otley.
Ooh, Otley. Of course you
of
had
course
to mention.
I picked this up.
Yes.
I know everybody else is probably like huge Donny Cates fans, and that's great for you, but I'm definitely here a little bit more for Ryan Otley.
Okay.
And Invincible, bro. Come on.
Otley doing Hulk does make me kind of happy.
Yeah, it makes, to me, it makes more sense than Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I didn't mind his Spider-Man stuff. The story for Spider-Man, I was kind of like, Spider-Man looked too much like
Invincible. Of course, and that's kind of why I'm like, it makes more sense because he drew a teenage superhero kind of character.
Yeah. Forever.
It makes a lot of sense to put him on Spider-Man. So right. I'm actually very much in support of their decision to do that one at all.
No, I totally
I actually think Hulk's like a little bit of a stretch because even his big monstrous
How
guys.
Freaking cool is that? I just flipped to a page that's got like a double page spread that is awesome.
I don't think I have a problem with thinking of him drawing something big and emotional like the Hulk. And obviously one of the biggest assets to Otley's repertoire is his motion in fight scenes.
Dynamics is what I was going to say.
Well, it's so insane. He has a challenge he did for a long time where his kid would draw random scribbles on a page, and he would have to turn it into something every day. That was his challenge to himself to draw. And the monsters he would come out with sometimes were phenomenally cool off of these, like, four scribbles. So the fact that he's drawing Hulk, and it kind of reminds me of that stuff.
Of the monsters that he used to draw.
The stuff that he would pull out of, you know, out of his head here and there. He's like, oh, you know, do this. And this kid would do it, and he'd just make this cool monster. So,
oh, that's neat.
Yeah, it's... The art in here is phenomenally cool. It's very, very comic book. Very, very much that.
Yes.
He does Hulk very well. He does anger very well. He does facial expressions very well. And the story is actually really good.
Yeah.
But it's Donny Cates. So Donny Cates is on that. Donny Cates is on that, you know. Still, I think he's still on that upward trajectory of gaining fans.
Agreed.
Honestly. So people keep finding him and going, oh, this I like this. This stuff's great.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be a lot more people that even jump on this one, even if they did not read all of his previous stuff, like all of his Venom stuff or anything else, you know, Thanos and
right.
anything else maybe he's written in the previous few years. If they didn't jump on that and they jump on this because they like Hulk and they didn't like the other characters, I think they're going to be pleasantly surprised.
So what did you think as a first issue where it goes? And you were saying that as Immortal Hulk, you kind of skip that there's a potential you might lose a little bit if you didn't
read through it? Well, they reference an incident that happened. Okay. And I mean, honestly, if you want to just read this and you say, okay, the thing happened, I get it. Cool, we're moving on.
I thought that incident is in 50.
Yeah, it probably is in 50.
I've heard, again, I didn't read it, but from what everything I got told from everybody, the big life-changing drop in the word immortal, because it's no longer immortal, and the big event that happens in that is all contained in 50. So you could just jump there if you want to play the notes ahead of time, right. But you think it's okay to jump straight into this.
You can jump straight into this if you want to. You don't actually have to have read 50. I think when they put out collected editions of this, they might actually include
50.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if they're going to do that or not because it's two different writers.
Yeah. Well, those two writers are super duper close. So.
Yeah. But it's, like I said, I didn't feel lost or anything like that. It didn't lose me. It just made me go, okay, there was an event. Something happened. It was catastrophic. And this is the result. We're dealing with the result now in this book. So now we're moving the story forward from here. And I liked it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was done really well. So you get a really interesting take on Bruce Banner in this one because this is more Bruce Banner than it is Hulk.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And man, he's mad.
Bruce Banner's mad.
Bruce Banner is mad.
Maybe he should just realize he was always mad.
Well, he knows he's always
mad.
That
was his secret.
But he loses control and he's the one in control being mad, which was like, okay. Kate's is good at that, taking a idea that's kind of fringe or maybe you didn't think of and coming at it from a completely sideways angle and going, 100%. Hey, I'm going to write this story based through these eyes.
Well, you've got Hulk that's played through the years of, you know, where they played around with, you know, the Gray Hulk and the
Peter David stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, the different aspects about, you know, like the psyche being different, you know, ideas and all this. And I think that that's something that seems like it would very easily highlight for what Cates wants to play in the arena of.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's because the Hulk, you're very much dealing with the inner monster. Mm-hmm. That's what the whole story is always about, is dealing with your inner monsters, which nobody ever wants to do anyway. But you're kind of forced to in this scenario. So for me, I'm pretty much all in on this one. The only reason I would knock it down on the bun level is simply for the fact that if you're somebody who can't get behind the idea of the event and you need to know what the event is and you'll have to go backwards and read that, I can understand being frustrated with that. So I would go like 4.25 out of 5 buns.
That's
because of that.
That's not bad at all.
That's the only reason I'd knock it down, really, is because it does rely on a previous event and it notates, hey, this happened. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to read this, you should go read this. But this is, you know, this event took place in this location and we're dealing with Fallout.
And I'm going on and moving on.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. So the comic book I read was Superman, Son of Kal-El, number 5, which is a big to-do because it was on National Coming Out Day. It was actually promoted. Mm-hmm. We talked about it on a previous podcast, and it finally came out, and I read it. And it was great. It's not as big of a deal as it was potentially hyped to be in my head.
Well, how much is that hype is built from just the media?
Just the media. So. Well, that's, I don't blame DC on this. I blame everyone else and how we can't handle certain things as a society. But, for the most part, Jay Nakamura, which is, this new character in Superman, Son of Kal-El. And it's, he is a reporter and kind of like an internet blog reporter, finding the real truths and, you know, answering the hard questions by, you know, boots on the ground kind of thing. He has the ability to phase, kind of like Kitty Pryde. That's the big deal. We learned that in issue 2 of this series. And this story is about Superman or John Kent kind of trying to accept the fact that he's not exactly the Superman everyone else knew. With his half-human body, he wants to be able to save everyone, but he kind of... his power drains faster than his dad's because he's got human in him. And so he can't zip around the world and be fine. He needs like
He's got them dirt jeans.
Yeah, he's got to take care of himself. So this is a lot of John trying to push to the limit to save every human being he can, and realizing that someone's got to take care of him. And Jay seems to be the person that wants to do that. Very heartfelt, incredibly well done. Tom Taylor can't do wrong in my eyes at this point.
Fanboy.
I'm such a fanboy. It's. I wish I could say I'm not. Like, oh, I'm coming at this from.
No, I'm gonna be cool about it. No.
No, I'm an absolute fanboy. It's ridiculous. I get giddy when
you are a girl at a Beatles concert.
Yeah, absolutely. When I get the chance to like stack up like three or four Tom Taylors and I get to just read them straight, it's just a great hour of comic books. You know, it's just fun. And every single time you jump into it, the story's told so well that even if you're reading just the single issue, you're having a good time without needing to know all the ins and outs of what happened previous or what may happen later.
Well, and we've covered this on Tom about
Tom's
this.
Is podcast,
that,
yeah.
And the big deal about it is that he has such a respect for history, mm-hmm. that him treating everything in history so well engrosses us deeper because of the idea that, again, we get to relive some of that idea too, and it's playing with our emotions.
100%. I don't want to shy away from John Timm's artwork as well. Incredible work. I'm not gonna pit him against Otley because I believe that Otley might eke it out better. But what I'm getting from this comic book is brilliant artwork, engaging and dynamic. So. Just in general, a really good book. It has a really big high and high action, high octane, and then kind of slides into a very humble, warm, cozy moment. And I just thoroughly enjoyed it. So for me, the whole series is pretty much a 4.75 buns. The comic itself was a 4, just because it was overhyped. And I hope that we can get past this issue and move on to how great the whole story is as a whole.
Nice.
But definitely pick it up if you haven't.
Tyler.
Tyler, what did you read?
No.
Nope.
Tyler.
Yes.
Do you know what time it is?
I do.
I have no idea.
Yeah. You don't know what time it is?
I don't know what time it is.
I do.
Spinning the racks. Da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. Spinning the racks.
Now, Tyler. Do you realize what time it is?
Yeah, I should have seen that coming.
Yeah, okay.
Would you say we're spinning the racks?
Feels like it. Yeah.
So, today's topic, the reason we brought...
I think Tyler's afraid to say the word because he's like worried that somebody's going to like internet strip it.
Do what they did to me.
and come out with the remix.
Yeah. So the reason we have Tyler here today is because...
Who is Tyler?
Tyler is someone that's been here longer than me. He's a
fixture.
He is a fixture. Came with the store.
We moved in and he was like huddled in the corner. He said, "Can I have job?" I were like, "I guess
he
so."
Like talk full can sentences
I has.
Yet.
He said, "Can I has?
Can I has job?"
Can you break down that weird nest you've made?
He was gnawing on a piece of wood.
Our wiring was messed when we moved in there because of him.
But
it's actually true.
Tyler's actually the lead for our video game department. All of our retro games and kind of really one of the people that spearheaded the entire movement to bring video games to I Want More Comics and Games. With Keith and Tyler combined and one other person, it was kind of a go, 2 years ago now? Is that
now
where we're
coming,
at?
I think so we're coming like, up on a little bit more.
I think it was like 6 months after we moved in here we started doing that.
Yeah, it was pretty...
Oh, I guess we are closer to 3 then.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's crazy.
But the idea was, again, you know, like all things in a pop, if we're going to be a true pop culture center, mm-hmm. what are the other parts that fit in well? What are the other things that our customers care about in the different areas? And so we brought a little bit in. We had an opportunity to buy out one store that was killing their video
their
game
entire section
counter.
There.
We bought it all out. We brought it in, started playing with it, started figuring out mm-hmm. what the hell's what, and what could we do?
Yeah, yeah. And genuinely,
well, I know it was a bit of a learning curve when we first got here.
Crazy, so, crazy learning curve, and
it was vastly different than comic books were.
Yeah, so, I still
it surprised me how how night and day they were at the beginning. I was like, what the hell?
Well, there's a 9.4 grade on a comic video game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, perfect. We're good. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to talk about video gaming and why is it a pop culture thing? What is it collectible? Why is it collectible? What makes it collectible? And does it include what you're getting now? Does it matter? Keith, why don't you start us off with the idea? You said we brought it in, we bought it. What kicks this off? Is it because you're just inherently a gamer? Was it an opportunity you saw with the world around us that it's something that obviously was we had it was going to happen regardless?
Personally, I've been a gamer and I've been around video games for it's probably my earliest memory. And I literally mean that from like 3 years old because my father owned a video game arcade.
That's right.
In small town Sterling, Colorado. And I remember going around being the small kid, pushing the button on the bottom of the pinballs, turning them on in the mornings, kind of thing like that. And we always had computers at home, so we always had a little bit of gaming. And I have a very distinct, clear memory of when Dad bought the original Nintendo system that came with both Duck Hunt and Gyromite. and Robbie the Robot and all
did
that.
Did you guys have the robot?
Yeah, absolutely. Although quickly kicked that kid out of the way so you could just operate the thing faster because sending him commands and not dying.
Too slow, bro.
Yeah, you're just like, knock it off, kid. You're just not keeping up here. But so for me, you know, video games have definitely been there forever. For why it works inside the business is that while we had gaming going on from the earliest gaming we did here was Magic.
Yes.
We developed into board gaming. But at the same time, everybody, you know, so, oh, we do games. I'm like, oh, so do you have PlayStation? And we were answering the question, no, more than I wanted to answer the question, no.
Right.
So when you look at a design of a business, like say like Tradesmart, Second and Charles, which this whole idea of like you could bring your stuff in and you're like, I'm done with Magic. Take my entire Magic collection. All right, sir, we'll pay you, you know, $500 or you could have $625 in trade. Well, can I trade towards video games? Can I trade? And the circle of passing it around of, I still have hobby money here, you know, like I don't need cash out for some of those people and moving it into the hobby that they care more about.
Yeah.
It just makes a natural bit of sense for that. So when we found the opportunity, when we were here, we had the extra floor space that we could do when we found the, you know, the end with buying that other businesses section, it turned around and was something there, but it came with an inherent set of challenges, which was, doing video games, Sean already said it, is so much different than most of the other things that we do around here.
Right.
Because you've got, in comic books, it's pretty easy to just tell a collectible condition of a comic. You know, we could downgrade something when it's been beat up. You know, but, you know, like, and some people won't want a 90s comic that looks like it's been run over by a tractor.
Right.
But, you know, when you get to video games, first step is, can you play it, right?
Right.
Sell a lot. I mean, we sell a lot over there, Tyler, of lower-end games, right? I mean, that's...
it's just easy, playable, plug-and-play type things. I mean, we got it. You can buy it, put it on one if you have that system, and play away.
Definitely do. It doesn't have to start with collectability.
Right.
And that makes it line up a little bit closer to comics, right?
Right.
You can buy your weekly comics today without a care about collectability.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody pretty much takes care of their comics just because why not? You know, like, you don't know if you want to go back and reread it. You don't know if all of a sudden that first appearance is worth crazy money because it's Miles Morales.
Some of you bring your comics in. Yeah. You don't take care of your comics. I've seen them.
Why did you read this in the bathtub? Yeah.
But there's the flip. You don't have to, right?
You don't, yeah.
The only thing that you have to take care of is, say, like a newer...
Collectible, yeah.
No, a newer video game is the idea is that, you know, if you scratch a disc, you can't play. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, that kind of idea. Yes. And whereas the cartridges from the old system seem a little bit more bulletproof. You know, like you could throw those on the floor like we all did as kids and have a lot less problems. Yeah. So being able to have a practical application of playing with your toys or playing with your collectibles first, you know, like that's a side, and we support a lot of that here.
Absolutely. So, Tyler, with you, would you consider yourself a pretty big gamer? Like, does it come from, how long have you been gaming, and, like, what is it in your life?
Yeah, as long as I can remember, I've been playing.
You've been hammering. Are you, like, a console guy? You like computers? Or is it just everything?
Both. Now it's more just computer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been playing everything since I was three, probably.
Right. Yeah.
So did you start off console?
Yeah.
How hard was the adjustment?
I was doing both because like I think I started playing PC at like I'd have been like six, like Age of Empires 2. So that would have
dang. Yeah,
I was a child playing on the PC, and then so I just was playing both the whole time. Mm-hmm. I never really had to adjust, I guess.
When we started all this, and I watched us kind of putting together the concepts of how these were going to go, Tyler was championing it. He was really very interested. What interested you in about the like the retro gaming collection? Like, is there something that you see these as collectibles? Like for me with comic books, I'm constantly always looking at like. I always kind of decide what I'm going to start collecting, you know, and I know that you're a big Dragon Ball Z collector. You're big into Mario. Was there a time where you were like, you know what, I'm just going to collect every console. And when you did that, is that what kind of triggered your interest here as being the lead for that?
I've just always wanted to play as many games, old games, newer games, kind of anything. So mm-hmm. I have most of the consoles, and then it's not easy to find them usually. So that's right. Kind of a thing. Yeah. So it does help to, yeah.
How with the Nintendos, like, I know that we've gotten a few NESs like originals, right? Yep. Are those harder to keep working, or like, is it just kind of like a collector's piece and you should like buy like the simulator, or should you like, what's the real collector like mentality? Should it you be only playing on the original NES, or can you get a simulator, play on that, and then keep your NES for your collectible?
I mean, yeah, you can do both.
Yeah, what do you do?
I try to get the original and have them.
You purist.
if I can. They're all original NESs with box. NESs are like all dying at this. They're all so old that they're all.
How dare you say they're so old? Everyone in this room.
Oh, he's absolutely sizing us up for the crypt. Yeah. He's like, I can't believe any of you still can walk around today.
You son of a...
Tyler has played a buttload of old games that are much older than him. Tyler's younger than I am by a bit. Not much. But every time I bring up like old games, he's like, oh, heck yeah, I played the crap out of that. And it always gets me going. So what's your favorite console for now? If you had to pick, like, let's leave.
What's your favorite console of all time?
All time.
All time. Yeah, we'll go all time. Okay, all time.
That's fine.
I want everyone to answer this one.
That's probably, I don't know, it's somewhere between, like, the 64 or the PS2, I think.
Ooh, okay.
Is that, yeah, that you think that that's a lot of, about the era that you played?
Yeah, because that was, it was, you know, like, 6 to 12, kind of that area playing that. And that was a lot of that was just what I played the most.
Oh gosh. Now I think mine era wise, like nostalgia, I think carries most of it, is the Sega Genesis. I freaking loved Sonic, and it felt like a little rebel era of, because he always had Nintendo, and it when Sega came in, it was like a challenge. And it was just kind of cool. It was sleek and black, 16-bit looking slick, and I played the crap out of that thing.
I played, like I said, NES forward I played, although I was way more into Nintendo over Sony.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't actually.
Console Wars. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I only had a PS1, mm-hmm. and it way after it came out because I wanted to play Chrono Cross. And then I didn't really get deep into that until it was PS4 time when we all started playing together. So I think that my all time favorite, just for the nostalgia factor, is still going to end up being Super Nintendo, and that has to do a lot with which games you could play on that. That base game of Super Mario World, played it so many times. Zelda. That's probably still going to be my number one Zelda ever, is Link's Awakening. And then Chrono Trigger is my number one RPG. So all of those all hit in that same area. And then I've got other games I like on other consoles, but I actually do think probably across the board that those rank up as the highest for me. Like they will. I love Battle of Olympus and the original Zeldas on the NES.
Right.
I love Chrono Cross on two, but I'm still going to put Chrono Trigger up higher over
Trigger,
those two.
Trigger was better.
What about you, Sean?
For me, I would honestly say probably PlayStation 2, because that's kind of what you want to talk about, collectability and that kind of idea. So I've been playing video games since Atari, easily, and I loved, like, we were too poor to afford a lot of the gaming systems and all that stuff when I was growing up, but I don't know how in the hell my mom did it. I don't know which kidney she sold, but she was able to get me a Nintendo.
Turns out you had one lost brother. In
yeah, that's fine. We don't need another one.
Yeah, that's fine.
You have plenty of family.
Yeah, and he doesn't need to be there. I have other family.
Yeah.
But I got a Nintendo for like my 15th birthday
and
loved the hell out of it. That was amazing. I'd never had a Sega Genesis. You know, I had a Super Nintendo, not for very long, because I think about that time I had graduated and got a job, and gaming kind of went to the wayside for me for a little bit until I came back. I had a PlayStation 1 and I didn't play it that much, and it didn't really catch the bug again until I got a PlayStation 2, and then I was all in,
and then I was like,
you know what, I need to collect all these gaming systems. And I went back and bought like the other Atari one,
there's 78, there's 24, there's the Lynx. There's the, like...
It was like an Atari Graphics or Jaguar. That's the one I was thinking of, yeah.
Oh, you're thinking, yeah.
Yeah, so I actually collected that with the games I could get for that. Like, right. I collected a bunch of them and ended up having to sell all my stuff when I ended up having to live by myself. Right. And I was like, oh, rent.
Oh, that's what
happened. I got to sell stuff.
Yeah.
So all my collectible gaming stuff went out the door so I could afford rent for 3 months.
Well, and that brings me to the other thing. When we talk about...
Silent Hill was my jam on PS2.
Nice.
That was PS1.
When we talk about collectability, what we also talk about...
It was one?
It was two.
It was two? I thought it was two.
There's Silent Hills on both. I think it was one into two.
Because I played the hell out of Silent Hill. I love all the horror games.
I think the original was one.
Fatal Frame was awesome. All that stuff.
I was just guessing because I know it originally. I'm pretty sure.
I think it was one. Yeah, I think one was on the first one and then two was on the second one.
It definitely was in that overlap area where the two generations were coming.
They were kind of.
Think about right now how many PS5 games there are.
Yeah.
Like four?
Yeah.
It's been out for a year now and there's really. Upscaling of games you're playing.
Yeah. So what that brings in the collectability, like you said, you never had a Sega Genesis, right? Was there ever especially as they come in now, is there any console that you're like, oh, there it is. That's the one I was looking for. For me, it was the Dreamcast. I never had a Dreamcast and I couldn't find them anywhere. They had like the cool little like memory cards or the video games in the controller
with the game on the VMUs. Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, that's so dope, and I never got to have one. So,
I got very lucky on my Dreamcast because it was right when they were dying. Everything went clearance, and I was like, I'll buy it all. Ooh, Crazy Taxi! Yeah. And I was like, and I remember that there was, I think it was Street Fighter Alpha 2 that you could run. You could gain experience in, and like you could also cheese it by putting it into practice mode and then like walking away from the console for overnight, and just you come back to a whole bunch of experience to like buy costumes, wasn't it? It was unlock characters too,
yeah,
I think.
That sounds right.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Just that's when you start learning how to cheat.
See, that's exactly right. So that was my go to. Did you have a grail you were looking for, Tyler, that you were out there trying to find?
No, I mean, I've...
I know, Mister, I have all the things I ever wanted, but...
I've never gotten rid of any of my consoles, so I had, like, I have most of the stuff that I would want.
Wasn't there one that came in through recently that you were kind of like...
I want a Saturn.
That's what it was.
I don't want to spend Saturn prices.
Is Saturn a collectible right now?
I would never play it.
Right.
It's not worth playing any of the games on it.
Dude, I played Echo on Sega Saturn. Echo was the dolphin, right?
Yeah. I've never played a Saturn.
Yeah. What about you, Keith? Did you have a grail out there that you were like, oh, man, I wish I would have got one?
I don't think we've had one come through. We had the games come through and all this, but I would have considered a Super Famicom just because it's like kind of a cool nostalgia thing. There's no sense in it. Because again, like the for the games, like several of them are obviously going to be straight up Japanese games, and like reading text inside of a you know, a JRPG is not going to do any good for me.
A little rough.
Yeah, getting through the menu is a game in itself.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not really quite there. I will say this: the other one that you know, my dad very much was ear to the ground on all this type of stuff, and so at the time, Virtual Boys were dying. You could rent a Virtual Boy at Blockbuster. So they had units
I
there.
I remember that.
Yeah. So at the time that they died, they clearanced them all. My dad drove all over to try to find me, my brother, and him. And we all, three of us, got a Virtual Boy. So there would be some nostalgia that would draw me in on a Virtual Boy again. Mm. And that was, there's like, it's a perfect system that the first 5 minutes are amazing. And then after that, you're just like, what am I trying to do here? Yeah. But like the Mario Tennis in that one, you know, it looks really cool and great in 3D until you just start getting the headache.
then you cry. What about you, Sean? Did you have a grail?
Honestly, my grails are not quite video game systems.
Okay. Games? What are they?
Oh, no. I know what he's going to say.
Uh-oh.
Don't I?
Probably. There's two pinball machines.
And now I'm changing my answer.
Two pinball machines that would actually be my grail. I
now
know
that's
they're not technically
arcade.
They're not
I guess I
video
can.
Games,
yeah.
technically.
No. yeah,
but
you're
the, fun,
get him,
the Funhouse
you're
pinball Keith, machine and the Twilight Zone pinball
Keith
machine
just took off
I would
his shirt. He's
absolutely love to own. Yeah. Because I bought every single one I wanted on console.
Right.
And then sold them all. So I don't have grails
you
now.
You're already the king.
I was already like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. Hey, Twilight Zones, I guess it's crept up to about 9K now.
Yeah, see, that's why I don't own one.
Yeah. These are not cheap things.
I would have to sell Tyler and his car just to be able to afford one. You're for sale, right?
No.
I keep trying to tell him that.
Come on, yeah. man.
So as you
What's
talk,
your pinball grail?
Yeah, what's the pinball? I know he's got a list.
So there's a problem. Everybody wants you to get like, oh, your top pinballs. And I'm like, well, can I give you 15?
Yeah.
But
I'm going to go Ghostbusters. I want to go Ghostbusters.
Twilight Zone is in my top three, 100% there. My one that probably ekes out Twilight Zone is still Medieval Madness.
That one's a great one, too.
Medieval Madness is
what
the
makes the pinball the collectible? Is it like the cool features? Is it the 3D?
Dude, pinball's dope.
First off, you're talking, dope. you're very much talking about, when we talk about collectibles, right?
Yeah.
Think about a 9.8 comic, right?
Yes.
So you find the great condition comic.
Makes sense.
You go send it off, you get it CGC'd, sealed up and all this, and it's not going to deteriorate this point in time, right?
Right.
If you have a pinball machine, every
Whoops.
Game you play on it
yeah.
is slightly deteriorating the game. Now,
yeah,
you can do plenty of work on it. You can do a whole bunch of prep work into it to kind of like keep it a little bit cleaner, a little bit nicer, put in plastic overlays, you know, just change out the bad bulbs from the 90s yeah. that burn in for LED bulbs that are way lower voltage. You know,
right.
there's a ton of stuff that you can do to it, but there's also just the known factor that it just kind of always
it's going to degrade.
Ships.
It's like,
you're
it's
not
like
going to seal it. Yeah. You're not going to seal
exactly
it. Saran wrap.
It feels
and
like
never,
like car restoration and things
well,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're going to buy a car original. And you're going to be doing upkeep on that car for the entire time you have the car.
But here's that's the best part that makes pinball attractive to me is that I know how to shop a pinball.
Right.
I would prefer to constantly be playing 10 games and then clean it up. Like
yeah.
wax, re-wax
right.
the field,
yeah.
clean all the stuff up. I love that part. It's just such a calming zen moment to actually clean and work on the pinball kind of
idea. I am going to start my own business of CGCing pinballs.
Pinball machines.
So it's going to be a giant plastic box. Sealed.
This right. is not a pinball machine. It's a tradable commodity
it's a
now.
Commodity.
It's a stock.
Yeah, it's not going to work for
the hell are you
going
to move that stuff? Shipping prices for this are going to be
astronomical.
Think about this logic. Back in the 80s.
Unfortunately, get a 4.0.
Yeah. In the 80s, when you had a lot of pinballs and any bar you went into had
oh, they
pinballs,
all had them.
Right? You
yeah.
know, any
well,
Pizza Hut.
I kind of grew
you
up
know,
in bars.
Bowling alley.
Bowling
so
alley. All that kind of stuff. Great.
I played them all over the place.
By the time you got to the 90s, where
we're
some
also
of my.
That every single one had a dude smoking over it.
Yeah.
Smoking.
Like, I want to put Twilight Zone at about 93, 94 is when that one hit.
That's about right, yeah.
By that time, the number of arcades are way down. plenty of the arcades are like the old Nicola Plays, Jolly Times.
They started going the way of the Dodo because of consoles.
Well, they also quit pinballs because pinballs to keep maintenance were way harder just fixing the Street Fighter joystick kind of thing. So there was just way less of them out there. And so like the pinballs that we really talk from the era, some of the great ones out there of Medieval Madness, Star Trek Next Generation, Twilight Zone, the actual production counts are, I want to say Medieval Madness was under 4K. Like, yeah, I want to say...
Not, there was not a ton of them out there.
It's just not
All I'm saying
there.
Is you put it in a box, and then you can put the simulator next to it on the computer, and you get the space bar for the little...
I definitely have played the simulators, but if I had there is zero chance that I would not put a game on it every single day.
Yeah.
If one of the grails is available, I'm playing it every day.
Yeah, I have, well, because I've played versions of these, obviously, through PlayStation.
Of course.
Because you can download and buy the different pins.
Which is just as good as the original.
Not even close. Oh, wow. No, that's exactly. You're getting into, this is the timing of pushing the button. There's actually finesse and there's all this crazy stuff you can do with the pinball machine that you can't do with the simulator. There's no way.
So let's talk about real quick what makes your video game collectible. I was joking about a CGC to pinball machine, but you can
it's legit for cartridges and some discs.
Can you do consoles? Does anyone know this?
I don't know. I don't know if I've seen a console.
I've never seen it.
I don't. Sure
you but we have could. Seen games.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure you could. They probably do.
Well, what is it?
I mean, they probably would do a console.
You know, Legend of Zelda and Mario 3. I've seen absolutely graded high grade that go for stupid money.
The interesting thing about that grading system is that that's located here, right, Keith?
So WATA is one of the leading graders. WATA. They're your CGC kind of level. They will encapsulate and give it a grade. Mm-hmm. You can grade everything from a raw cartridge all the way up through a still sealed game, you know, still original shrink wrap and all this. And, of course, there's different grades. There's different conditions.
Of course.
All that type of stuff in there. You can have a 10-0 on a cartridge alone. You can have a 10-0 on a sealed, you know, one.
Are there going to be different labels?
Obviously, I think probably. There's a sub category underneath it as to what the, how complete is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so, like... without getting all the way to the WATA level, but even here at the local level, we typically have three grades, you know, for everything that we sell. We have a loose grade, which just means that you have the game, you know, just that, no more. We have a complete, which will, you know, would we consider a game and manual complete? We wouldn't, right here?
No, if it's missing anything, it's not complete.
Okay. So it's, what is that considered?
It needs to be box game.
Artwork manual game.
Yeah.
Okay. There's actually
more to that then. Okay.
Yeah, you can actually have a different price for just manuals.
Yeah.
You know, like you can buy just a straight manual because there's some people that will piece it together and recomplete it.
Okay.
So there's complete and then there's still sealed and new. Mm-hmm. And obviously sealed and new is everything there still, you know, sealed up and all this. So that obviously all of it same as any type of condition changes the price tags on everything that you're talking about. We recently had talked with somebody who owned some really cool stuff. And it was possible that they, you know, want to sell it. They're still considering this. But imagine seeing a Super Mario Brothers 2 still sealed
in the box
with a KB Toys price tag on it, I think is the one that was on there, or was a Toys R Us or something like that.
I don't remember.
Original price tag still on it. Not graded yet.
Right.
But
just sitting there.
We still estimated that out at a $4,000 item.
Wow.
And like Tyler, what do you got a rough ball guess as to what we would sell just a loose Super Mario Brothers 2 cartridge only on?
Super Mario 2 cart would be maybe it might hit 20.
Yeah, maybe
15 to 20 in there somewhere.
That's a big difference. Oh,
yeah. Well,
wow.
Yeah, everybody threw their box.
Who the hell?
Nobody kept the box.
Forget that. Who turned around and left it sealed?
Yeah, nobody.
Right.
Even, yeah, if you're a kid,
complete is at least 100. I mean,
yeah, that's as a kid, you're gonna like ridiculous. You're ripping that sucker open and throwing it in the console, and you're gonna start jamming on it, man. There's no way of keeping that in the box.
It's insane that there is some.
I was a wild animal when I got a new video game. It wasn't even close.
The ET game, you were a wild animal.
Oh yeah,
on Atari.
Heck yeah, totally
you were the ET game. Give this guy Reese's Pieces and soft to the races. But
there's a whole documentary about that.
No, so WATA will grade your stuff, and obviously massive premium for the better conditions.
Oh, yeah.
We've had one sell for over $1 million, right? There's a Super Mario that sold for over $1 million.
Was it three? or it was two?
No, two something.
One, it was one.
Or no, yeah, one.
It was one.
Was it one?
1.6? 1 point.
No, no, no.
Which game? I know Super Mario 1 and then Super Mario 64 also.
64 was the one I remember.
Zelda was like 400,000 or something.
Yeah, so remember, almost all the consoles back then came with, you know, they started doing, after the first couple of years, they were doing these triple carts.
Mm-hmm.
You would either have, when there was the pad that was track and field, Duck Hunt, and Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then there was Super Mario Brothers, Duck Hunt combos. There was, I think the Gyro Mite wasn't a combo. I think all three of the cartridges were still separate at that point. Sure. But there was also just a straight Super Mario that was sold off the shelf in the black box that everybody remembers, all those black boxes that were the Nintendo games. That's the one that's the big premium because there was way less of that since most systems came with the game.
Right.
And it still had a like intact sticker, which isn't a thing that you can find. Those stickers just go away, basically.
Yeah, wow. Proving provenance and how legitimate it was, that this hasn't been altered or tampered with or anything. Yeah, you're not talking about something that's easy to come across.
That's incredible. Tyler, tell me if I'm rich. I have a Nintendo 64 Superman animated video game.
Superman 64?
Yeah. I got thousands, right?
Nope. That's terrible.
Wait, how much is it?
I don't even know how much.
I have a original E.T. Out of box. Just straight up E.T.
I mean, yeah, it's probably
I'm making money.
It's probably worth something.
I have a Game Gear.
Yep.
X-Men.
Ooh.
He's making this crap up.
That's all of these are real. X-Men Legends, I think it was called.
Yeah, nothing on the Game Gear is worth
it. Oh, nothing on my Game Gear? R.I.P. to my Game Gear.
So if you're looking at home and you're kind of curious about values and all this, I mean, the only solid area, there is no price guide. There's one website that does accumulate pricing data.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the pricing data is just straight raw accumulation of everything that's on eBay. So it's the same answer that we're going to give most everybody about comic books. The current market price of your book is what somebody just paid for it on eBay.
That is correct.
That's a fair number to say that somebody else bought this and has it there. You always look around and try to get a couple comps.
Try to get a trend.
Because one crazy guy who turns around and promises his cousin, you know, Elroy, that he's going to buy his game for $3,000 so we can sell the other one for $3,000. It's not necessarily true.
Sometimes people just have way too much money and a real big need.
Yeah.
It's one guy.
Well, or you're just turning around and over hyperinflating some of the stuff by two guys colluding for something like this. But eBay sold listings is your easiest way to chase down, you know, what the value of a game is and all this. We use a system that turns around and brings that together. And then, you know, for us, we're always buying, selling, trading. I mean, everything across the board, just the same as everything else, wrapping this whole thing back full circle to why we brought the department in.
So what you're telling me is if I do have, like, a little box of old school, like, Sega Genesis and Nintendo 64 games, I can bring that bad boy in and get some of those fresh pops I was looking for?
The whole thing that we've had.
Please do.
Yeah, we've had people left and right bring in stuff to turn around and feed their other addictions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. That's the whole process.
As the kids say, bussin'.
Nope.
I don't think that's it.
Oh, that's not.
You're not a kid.
Oh, what?
Sorry.
Oh, well, the point is that I think that just seeing all my old video games coming back up and, like, becoming collectible, I now know what it felt like to be in the 60s when I was buying Marvel Comics and seeing all them launch. So.
A ton of fun about this also is the idea that some of this stuff, collectible, using the air quotes around it, there's plenty of games out there that aren't. Like,
they're just
you want to play, here's an option that we also sell here. You want to play Nintendo, don't even have to have an original Nintendo. We have retcons. We have,
thank you for bringing those up, yes.
Yeah, we have the Yobo, right? Mm-hmm. I think that one's, I think that's our cheapest option that we have out there.
Yeah.
But what you have is that there are new consoles built with hardware inside of it that do the exact same thing that your Nintendo used to do.
Mm-hmm.
What's the downside? Because let's talk downside first, right? The downside first is that the timing on everything on this is a little bit different. So if you'd like to compete in those world speed runs and get perfect on a game and all this, these are not the consoles for that.
I can't do that.
Also, your old consoles have a hard time plugging into, you know, current televisions.
Right.
And, like, no light gun works at all. You know, like, that's until you go back to the old stuff.
I thought we were talking one time, you told me that there was, like, a overlay or something you could put on your new TV. That
so there's one light gun that is modified to be able to play Duck Hunt. Yep. Like there's
as
a
it should be. You need to have a top loading NES. It has to be an original top loading NES.
Yeah, it's whoa, it gets wow. weird about playing. So skip the gun games. Forget about those in your life. But
those are dead.
What if you wanted to turn around and buy a Yobo and turn it? So what do we got those at? 25?
25, yeah. 120, yeah. 125. Yeah.
Okay, that's a brand new price. That's brand new hardware and all this. Already comes with a controller, has that, will plug in to a new system, to a new TV. If you wanted to turn around and buy that awful, unbelievably, tragically bad Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game on the NES.
I will come at you, sir. Like that was a great masterpiece of a game.
If you lost Donatello, you couldn't play the game.
It was a rough go. It was you could fake it with Mikey. You could get that little distance.
You know, Mike, quarters Mikey. I dumped into the Nickelodeon when that was a thing.
I wish there was a way to skip a section by sacrificing one of the turtles. I would have fed Mikey to it every
how
time.
How dare you?
The trash
I'm
can
sure
of
the
a,
amount
you,
of quarters I spent, I probably could have bought a brand new TMNT one.
You could have bought the entire cabinet and brought.
Want to play a good TMNT game? Get the arcade game. But that's on
Turtles time, baby.
But. For under $40, you could be playing on one of the old games and having the time of your life. The new systems that are put out actually have the exact same ports, so that they'll support the old hardware. The old remember the old NES Advantage, the nice stick controller and all this. Yeah, if you can find one of those, because they're real popular right now because they're so good.
Yeah,
those little tank sticks are great, but they'll plug into these new systems. So. They've revived this entire area here where you can buy systems. And if you really want to go, we got the Retcon 5 is the one that supports Game Gear, Genesis, Famicom, Super Nintendo, Nintendo. I think it's the 5.
And up to Advance, Game Boy Advance.
Oh, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance. Yep. It plugs in all that stuff into one system. Actually comes with a wireless controller. Yep.
And you can plug any of those controllers into it.
And all your old controllers work. It's really kind of a cool system
in
all this.
That's slick.
Yeah, it does all this stuff and will let you play. So if you have old cartridges at home.
That's a lot of converting.
You can turn around and just absolutely just fire it up on one system.
Excellent.
So options are out there to relive the nostalgia, to be able to play this type of stuff and have some fun with it.
So I'm going to end this with how do I gain respect by owning an original Power Glove? Is that a way I can do that?
I actually owned one of those.
Yeah,
When it first dropped, I had one.
We really do need to break down and... I need to whoop all of you at a Super Mario Kart, so
I don't think it's possible.
You want to hear something funny?
Shoot.
Never played that game.
Oh, no, this is great. Just a couple days ago, I was explaining to him, I was like, oh, yeah, it's kind of like the Rainbow.
I've heard of the Rainbow Road, but yeah, I've never played it, never once.
The Rainbow Road's a video game, not a club.
No, what Keith was talking about. Oh, okay. I'd heard about this before, and I was like,
the track.
Cool. But
Super
I
Mario,
have never,
the best.
Ever
in
played
Mario
this
Kart
game.
64, right? I was where it first got introduced. Yeah. My mind's real fuzzy between Super Mario Kart and Mario Kart 64 because I definitely played
very
millions of
games,
hours but, on them.
Yeah.
Either way, if you guys are interested or want to get into start your collection for video games, this is the place to do it. Like all your other fun pop culture needs, Tyler. I really appreciate you jumping in. I know this is not your favorite thing to do, but your knowledge was appreciated. Until next time, I'm Richie.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Sean.
I'll be Keith.
We'll catch you next issue.
Poor Peter Parker was pitiful. Couldn't have been any shyer. Mary Jane still wouldn't notice him, even if his hair was on fire. But then one day he went to that science lab, that mutated spider came down. Oh, and now Peter crawls over everyone's walls, and he's swinging all over town. La la la. La 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 da da. Sling us a web, you're the Spider-Man. Sling us a web tonight. Cause we're all in the mood for a hero now. And there's evildoers to fight.